Well, in the Philippines, reporters are under much more pressure than they are here. Some have lost their lives, caught in the crossfire of the so-called war on drugs, launched by controversial President Rodrigo Duterte after he took power last year, a crackdown in which thousands have been killed by vigilante-style policing. And this week, there was chilling evidence of how that's being done in a special report from the news agency Reuters called Operation Kill.
I'm Claire Baldwin, reporting from Manila. The Philippine police have killed thousands of people in the war on drugs in what they say are legitimate police operations. Many of the shootout victims have been declared dead on arrival at hospitals like this one. The police say that they're rushing the victims to the hospital to try to save their lives. But we've been told, even by the police themselves, that the victims are dead before they're sent to the hospital. An attempt, they say, to cover up that these killings are actually executions.
In her visit to Manila last month, Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern said that the war on drugs deaths require investigation, and that came after a rather awkward-looking press conference in which she also made the point of telling the president they call the Punisher that New Zealand stands for peace.
No, you don't have a nuclear basis there.
No.
Yeah, I suspect that.
Yes.
You have none. I could not even see your police wearing guns.
They're not. Our police aren't routinely armed either.
No.
However, investigating the deaths during Duterte's war on drugs is no simple matter. There is a culture of impunity for police that's also putting journalists in the Philippines under pressure, and in some cases getting them killed as well. But 1 year ago, one of President Duterte's first actions was to create a task force to investigate violations of the right to life, liberty and security of members of the media, as his communications secretary Martin Andanar told members of the media at the time.
The reason why the president wanted this admin order or administrative order number one is because he cares for you, for us. And he believes in freedom of the press.
However, even before the Punisher took power, the Philippines was one of the riskiest places to be a reporter. Hundreds have been killed since the return of democracy in 1986, and the world's worst single atrocity committed against the media anywhere happened in the southern Philippines in November 2009. 32 journalists were among the 58 people shot and killed there in that action. Now, this week, the plight of reporters in the Philippines was discussed at the Auckland University of Technology's Pacific Media Centre at an event that marked its 10th anniversary. The executive director of the Philippine Center for Investigative Journalism, Malu Mangahas, was its special guest. And this week I asked her how, in a relatively robust democracy, the Philippines media seems so vulnerable.
It's one of the freest presses in the region, Asia-wide, but also one of the most rambunctious in its exercise of freedom. It's a community very jealous of the freedom of the press and the freedom of speech and freedom of assembly. It draws from experience that perhaps every time we have a people power revolt, the sad thing is freedom doesn't always guarantee excellent results. The fact is the drug problem is a very serious problem that's quite accepted across the nation. The method of the war on drugs is what divides the community.
Now, President Duterte is often compared overseas to Donald Trump. He came to power slightly before him, but does he actually foster resentment against the media in the same way as Donald Trump does? He will specify CNN, fake news, New York Times, failing media company.
Yes, against at least three media entities, major media, one television network, ABS-CBN, supposedly for not airing ads he'd paid for in the campaign in 2016. He criticized the newspaper Philippine Daily Inquirer because their owners supposedly failed to pay the right taxes. He criticized one online news media agency for supposedly bringing in money from abroad, which is not allowed. But Donald Trump takes issue with generally fake news. And in the Philippines, we are not quite comfortable with the term fake news, as, you know, because this is at core really misinformation, disinformation, propaganda and spin. Sometimes including the president, Mr. Duterte, because he says one thing and the next day he would say, I was just joking.
Okay. Well, as you mentioned, this so-called war on drugs is a huge story in the Philippines. Are journalists who are reporting on this actually being targeted themselves?
Well, they have been criticized supposedly by for being unpatriotic or for being un-Filipino.
Well, some have actually been killed, right? Some journalists reporting on this have actually lost their lives.
Under Mr. Duterte, 6 more journalists had been killed in the last 16 months. And also a number of cases increasingly now of death threats, physical harassment, and even online media harassment, trolling, death threats, rape threats from pro-government bloggers against media and netizens who have been critical. What's been threatened now more and more over the last 16 months has been the free flow of information. So you have online harassment. You have false news reports, false reports being peddled by government itself. You have verbal attacks against certain media agencies that are independent and critical, not for the right reasons, meaning the quality of work, the independence, accuracy of the reports we file, but because their media owners didn't pay taxes. Because so it's a very convoluted but very worrisome situation.
And Malu, you were a current affairs television presenter, producer, a series called Investigative Documentaries. Have you yourself been directly threatened or in fear of your life in the course of your work?
Our blessing has been journalists in the city, in Metro Manila, should fear less than our colleagues in the provinces, because the city is a big place. The city is where you could call for help instantaneously, it will come. But the provinces are a bit different. You only have one trial judge, one police chief, one mayor, and one governor who are often friendly to each other in the province. On the other hand, you have also situations when, for example, a politician would berate you to your face in a public press conference, and that's somehow also quite intimidating. You would have a situation where a politician would offer you a big envelope, wads of money, bills there, and to be mentally prepared is one important thing for journalists to do. How do you say, go ahead, your story will not come out if you give me money, and that will be part of the story. So, I mean, there are many different forms of harassment, but the more acute cases of harassment and even killing, they affect mostly our people in the provinces.
Now, with this, the war on drugs and the extrajudicial killings that we know have happened, you mentioned in your speech at the Pacific Media Centre, it's very difficult for journalists to actually get sources, to get actual, you know, standard comment for a credible news report. And for example, you've written about media personnel sometimes are compelled by police officers to sign on as witnesses in these anti-drug operations, which presumably actually compromises them, doesn't it, when it comes to reporting and accountability?
Exactly, Colin. For police operations against drug groups, the police should get either journalists or village officials as witnesses. And media across the Philippines have resisted. Mm-hmm. And if you don't sign up, you could be barred again from the next time an operation is conducted. You wouldn't be tipped off or you wouldn't be told. Some reporters would get, for example, tips from a funeral parlor operator and would be told that you go to this place under the bridge, there will be an operation at this day, at this hour.
A funeral parlor operator is giving media tip-offs like that?
Because a good number of cases in the areas where drug killings had been reported, some of the bodies had been brought straight off to funeral parlors or to the emergency rooms of hospitals. When we say that, you know, it's difficult to get countervailing sources on the drug war, the reason being is the police generally would have access to all the data and command of all the data. Then the families are really quite scared. Apart from just the operations, the police had been keeping a watch list.
So anyone who speaks to the media about what they see, it could be doctors, lawyers, families of victims, they fear that they could come in for attention from the security forces.
Yeah, because on the level of the community, the village officials, the mayors, and the police units in the areas have been told to document people who are in the community suspected of being users or pushers. The drug war has also produced some sort of a Big Brother directory of people suspected to be users and pushers. Some of those who had been killed in recent months were on the list. So that sense of fear, the climate of fear that you could be next or retaliation could be taken against you.
On the website of the Philippine Daily Inquirer, which is a reputable newspaper based in Manila, one of President Duterte's first administrative orders was to create a presidential task force on violations of the right to life, liberty and security of members of the media. And a spokesperson saying to reporters, President Duterte cares about you. He cares about freedom of the press. So was this genuine and has this task force helped at all?
Yeah, in a way it has, because former journalists are part of the secretariat of this, what they call the PTFMOS, Presidential Task Force on Media and Other Killings or Suppression of Rights of Media. So two killings had been reported to be work-related by this task force. The media groups that we are counting six. They're supposed to be investigated, cases filed in court, and prosecuted. But to this day, actually, the problem of task force is it's a secretariat, meaning it lives on the good graces of the agencies that are supposed to be part of the task force.
And you don't have faith in them?
We were just talking to them last week, and they're saying they have no money, they have no people, and they're not supposed to be doing even civic education amongst the police or amongst local officials, that it's not good, it's not right at all to kill journalists. So they don't have resources for that. Second of all, I think the problem is the police people who are supposed to be witnesses in these incidents or investigators in generally all these incidents are hard put doing investigations right. Cases die on tracks. Because of very bad police investigation, we lose physical evidence. So the crime scene is violated, no more physical evidence. Nobody takes care of the witnesses promptly.
So in the end, this presidential task force isn't, you would say, particularly effective in either preventing violence or intimidation of journalists or investigating it when it happens.
I think it's good in the sense of a monitoring or an oversight work it can do, but action for building cases and then prosecution, that is the balance of work that it cannot do because of lack of resources and manpower.
And finally, Malu, you mentioned in your speech at the Pacific Media Center that there's a kind of a tide to these things. Sometimes there's more media freedom, more transparency in government, but then sometimes it can go back to what you described as more opaque again. And you said it's not just happening in Philippines. You said places like Myanmar, for example, Malaysia, there's some retrenchment there, even Thailand, you know, which is also a place that's gone from, I guess, military governments to democratic ones. Do you think there is a kind of Asia-Pacific-wide trend now where we're seeing transparency close down a little in several countries and a kind of what you described as opaqueness on the rise?
Yeah, I think this is a situation that seems to be a point of urgent reflection by us people in the media. The observation has been made that the pushback has been toward some kind of dark populism. I mean, these are popular leaders. I mean, they heed the popular clamor for urgent action on really strategic issues or really long-time concerns of the populace.
Like drugs, for example.
Poverty, I think rights to job, land, etc. So many people outside, well, the capital region seem to be taking the side of leaders who project themselves as their advocate, as their avatar. In the Philippines situation, for example, Duterte came in after a series of elite political leaders from elite families who had been perceived to be quite slow, quite indifferent to the situation of people in the provinces, or particularly the marginalized and the poor. Of course, that doesn't say all at once that Duterte is authentic and perfect and totally with a heart that grieves and beats for them, because the results are yet to come out, whether he will do well on all the promises he's made. But the problem is, in a situation where such populism is housed in terms of being implemented, but with restrictions on freedom, but with control of the media, I don't think people are about ready to embrace that part of the story, meaning defend press freedom, defend democracy, defend rule of law. Because we have one guy here who says that he champions their welfare and their rights to basic amelioration. And I think across the region, in Southeast Asia in particular, the sub-region, we see that sometimes reforms are announced and celebrated, and then they don't take root. And then they're challenged by interventions like this of leaders who would say that because this is the right thing to do, we'll have to restrain some of the freedoms that had been given to you. I think the problem is also we have focused too much on the capital cities. The situation is much different in local communities.
I think that's right. And finally, I would just like to ask one more thing. Journalists in Australia and New Zealand have contributed and raised funds for the Media Safety and Solidarity Fund. And that, in part, some of the money raised there goes to support families of people who were killed in that Ampatuan massacre.
Right.
Is this actually helping? And is this something that you think needs to continue and that media organisations, journalists, you know, still need to raise money and support people in that area?
Yeah, I think so. First off, thank you very much for really assisting, because we are part of a media group called Freedom Fund for Filipino Journalists. And every time a murder happens, the big issues that have to be addressed would be burial expenses. And after the burial, of course, some livelihood assistance for the family members who've lost their breadwinner. But also, over time, education for the children. You know, if only our government had better funding for the witness protection program and for programs like this, including the task force that has no money to assist. I mean, this is not point of just a charity. This is a point of, you know, having these people get a chance to rise again and actually move on with courage as well as focus that, you know, justice could be served and justice should be pursued. So when we do have families, like Maguindanao, the Ampatuan massacre, for example, left about, I think, over 36 orphans. And part of the problem is after the burial, reality bites and you have to find some livelihood for the mothers or the children who had been left behind. And then school year opens, you'd have to find some schools that would give them discount on tuition. So the government doesn't do that for this, for the victims of media murders. And over time, also, one continuing expense would be medical treatment or medication for some of the family members or those who survive or who had been injured in some of the cases. So a lot of help is needed, and I think journalists all over the world had been so gracious in supporting situations in the Philippines as well as elsewhere in the world where media murders continue.
Wow, it's a level of risk we simply don't face in journalism in New Zealand. Thank you so much for coming in to tell us all about it today.
Thank you, Colleen, and maraming salamat sa lahat ng mga tumulong. And in English, that means thank you very much for helping us.
That was the executive director of the Philippine Center for Investigative Journalism, Malu Mangahas, formerly a prominent TV current affairs presenter and reporter herself based in Manila. And she was speaking at a special seminar last Thursday called Journalism Under Duress, which marked the 10th anniversary of the Auckland University of Technology's Pacific Media Center.